This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The Trump administration said last Sunday that Turkey will soon be moving forward with its plans to carry out a military operation in northern Syria to combat Syrian Kurdish fighters that Turkish leaders see as a threat. U.S. forces have backed Kurdish fighters in the battle to reclaim controls of areas from Islamic State fighters in Syria. Syrian Democratic Forces, a Kurdish-led military alliance that controls nearly one quarter of Syria's territory, said Sunday that any Turkish incursion into Syria would throw the entire region into indefinite instability. A second U.S. intelligence official has approached the intelligence community's watchdog with firsthand information that backs the original whistleblower complaint against President Trump's dealings with Ukraine. A lawyer representing the two said this on Sunday. Mark Zayed, who represents both whistleblowers, said the second whistleblower came forward after the intelligence community's inspector general began investigating in August. Meanwhile, the president is firing back, as VOA's Michael Sullivan explains.
Trump says he's concerned about corruption in Ukraine, possibly involving the Democratic frontrunner in the 2020 presidential campaign, Joe Biden, whose son, Hunter, had business dealings in a company that was under investigation in Ukraine. Trump asked the Ukrainian president to look into the matter in a phone call critics say was aimed at getting dirt on arrival in exchange for nearly $400 million in U.S. aid. An intelligence official complained, and another is said to have complained to Inspector General Michael Atkinson.
Comes from the most corrupt president we've had in modern history. He's the definition of corruption.
Trump calls the investigation a witch hunt by leading Democrats in Congress, including Adam Schiff, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And this is VOA News. The death toll in Iraq from 6 days of clashes between anti-government protesters and security forces rose to 104 people Sunday. As VOA's Zlata Sahok explains, the government is trying to appease demonstrators who've complained about the country's instability.
The government tried to stop the protests by imposing curfews and shutting down the internet. Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi issued a list of executive decisions Sunday on providing low-income housing, unemployment benefits, and vocational training. Earlier, he had offered to meet with protesters.
I will go and meet them without weapons and sit with them for hours to listen to their demands. If this will ease the situation, then I am ready to do that and spend the coming days in this sense. In return, we call on halting the protests in Baghdad's street and also in the provinces.
The prime minister also said that those killed in the demonstrations, whether protesters or security officers, would be considered martyrs, making their families eligible for state benefits. The head of the parliament promised to fight corruption. Larissa Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
A group of 11 key Taliban prisoners is reported to have been released from the joint Afghan-U.S. Bagram detention facility in Afghanistan in exchange for 3 Indian hostages. Insurgent sources said Sunday the swap took place in the northern province of Baghlan, and 2 former Taliban provincial governors were among those freed. Taliban men could be seen welcomed by insurgent fighters in video images released via social media. The Indian hostages were abducted last year, along with 4 other countrymen, while they were working on a project in Baghlan. North Korea has angrily walked from working-level nuclear talks with the United States, with Pyongyang's top negotiator saying Saturday he was greatly disappointed with Washington's inflexible approach. We get more from VOA's Bill Gallo.
North Korea's top nuclear envoy, Kim Myung-gil, says the talks failed because the U.S. would not abandon its old approach. The U.S. quickly disputed that characterization, saying the 8.5-hour talks went good and that the U.S. brought creative ideas. The breakdown raises the possibility North Korea will intensify its provocations days after testing a new medium-range ballistic missile. But the North's decision could also amount to a negotiating tactic meant to raise pressure on Washington. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
As the polls closed Indonesia's parliamentary election Sunday, the moderate Islamist Ennahda party appeared to be heading for victory. Exit polls showed that it was winning about 40 of the 217 seats, followed by the Heart of Tunisia party, but winning between 30 and 35 seats. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda says its forces killed 19 Hutu rebels who attacked a popular tourist area over the weekend.
The attack comes as a military court in Kigali began hearing last week the case of 25 alleged members of the Rwanda National Congress, led by former Rwanda Chief Defense Staff General Kayumba Nyamwasa.
We will speak with Archbishop Mtsuza of Malawi about a new church-led dialogue initiative. Zimbabwe threatens to take strike in public hospital doctors to court. We'll also speak with a spokesperson of the Doctors Association. And separatists declare a three-week ultimatum for Cameroon's government to free their comrades.
We're giving Prince Cameroon 3 weeks to release all our leaders and every single Ambazonian in their dungeons. They do not release them, we will shut down all of Ambazonia.
And Madagascar's caviar tickles the taste buds in France. The stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Rwanda's security forces say they killed 19 assailants and captured five others who on Saturday attacked a popular tourist area in the northern province of Musanze, known for its mountain gorillas. As Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali, the government says all activities in the area, including tourism, are back to normal.
Pictures of five alleged assailants wearing civilian and military attire are circulating on social media platforms in Rwanda. The Rwandan National Police says the five had been captured. The Rwandan Defense Force say they have killed 19 others. National Police spokesperson John Bosco Cabrera said all alleged assailants were neutralized. We are commending the community policing spirit of the residents. With them, we have been able to know where the assailants are hiding. Some were even caught by the local civilians. Security forces have intervened on time. Everything is okay now. Hearts of Rwandans need to be relieved. Assailants can't defeat us. So far, the alleged assailants who attacked the Musanze district in northern Rwanda and killed 14 civilians are yet to be identified. The survivors of alleged attack could only describe attackers but could not say where the alleged attackers came from. She says, I don't know where they came from. They attacked the people randomly at night. The attackers were dressed in civilian attire with guns and knives among other crude weapons. It was very terrible. The area that was allegedly attacked is adjacent to the Virunga National Park, home of the mountain gorillas. The attack comes as a military court in Kigali began hearing last week the case of 25 alleged members of the Rwanda National Congress, a dissident political party led by former Rwanda Chief Defense Staff General Kayumba Nyamwasa, who is in exile in South Africa. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Cameroon's Ambazonia separatists have given the government 3 weeks to free all detainees from the English-speaking regions of the country, or they will impose a total shutdown of the regions. The threat followed the Cameroon government's release over the weekend of main opposition party leader Maurice Kamto and more than 100 members of his party. Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Republic.
The release of Mr. Kamto doesn't really mean anything to all of us Ambazonians because Mr. Kamto is not a Southern Cameroon's leader. He is a citizen of French Cameroon. If anything, we see it as a mockery to us Ambazonians. For over a year, Ambazonians have asked for their leaders abducted from Nigeria to be released unconditionally. French Cameroon holds the so-called national dialogue, and guess who they release? They release their political prisoners, and ours are still languishing in their dungeons. So we are declaring a national lockdown of Ambazonia. We are giving French Cameroon 3 weeks to release all our leaders and every single Ambazonian in their dungeons. they do not release them as they have released their own political leaders, we will shut down and lock down all of Ambazonia.
Chris, I will talk to you later about the lockdown, but to say that President Paul Biya released just Francophone Cameroonians, that would not be fair, because last week, as you know, we spoke on the release of these 333 people who had been jailed in connection with the crisis in the English-speaking region.
James, Paul Biya said he is releasing 333 so-called Southern Cameroonians who have pending cases, misdemeanors, in the military tribunal in Yaounde. The people that Paul Biya is releasing, the 333, are Francophone prisoners who are dotted all over their own national territory.
In addition to the national dialogue, President Biya has offered to even change the name of Cameroon. Even the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has welcomed the release of Mr. Kamto, the national dialogue, and the other, what the Secretary General called, confidence-building and reconciliation measures taken by the government. Again, we said it takes two to tango. What are you willing to do?
Let me tell you, changing the name of the country from La République du Cameroun to the United Republic of Cameroon, does it give anyone freedom? Does it give Southern Cameroonians their independence? Think about those Ambazonians who went to that dialogue conference and asked merely for a federation. Just the mere mention of the word federation was an abomination in the ears of Francophones in that dialogue. When Chairman John Frundi mentioned the word federation, he was booed by the Francophones sitting in that hall. So we will not rest until we hear the name, the Federal Republic of Ambazonia, with our flag hosted in Boya. This is where we are heading to.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Republic of Cameroon. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. The Archbishop of Blantyre says the main purpose of the church's dialogue initiative in the ongoing electoral dispute in Malawi is to prepare the country for what happens next after the High Court rules on the matter. Archbishop Thomas Msuza is a member of the quasi-religious group, the Public Affairs Committee. He says the group has been holding discussions with all the stakeholders in the May 21st presidential election dispute, including President Arthur Peter Mutharika.
As a religious group, which is called PAC, instituted a group of mediators who would like to have the mission to make those stakeholders involved in the elections, make them talk. So our mission is to meet all those who are really grieved, just to let them talk. And at the end, if there is a possibility to let these people come together and dialogue and find a solution for this political situation in Malawi.
You had a meeting the other day with the Justice Jane Ansah. She's at the center of the protests that have been going on. How did that meeting go? And have you also met with the other stakeholders?
Before we met the chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission, we met the other stakeholders. At the end, we managed to talk to the chairperson, Jane Ansah. And our talk was very cordial, was very fruitful. For us, the fact that she accepted to meet us was already a positive point for us.
Archbishop, the former president, Bakary Muluzi, also had a peace initiative. And when you talk to people, they say, well, the case is in court. The effort you are involved in, does it take into consideration the fact that the issue arising from the May 21st election are before the court? Do you take that into consideration?
When we are really talking to these stakeholders, we also consider that issues of the electoral process are in the courts. We've seen two scenarios that will come out. Either the ruling will be for the status quo, which means to just to continue the way it is now, or there will be a rerun. In both cases, there might be problems. So our engagement in the dialogue is to see what happens after. Because for sure, if it is a status quo the way it is now, one group will not be happy. If they rerun, another group will not be happy. So we are trying to look at the issues after the ruling of the court.
The protesters have been demanding the resignation of the removal of Justice Jean Ansah. Did you discuss that with her?
What we are trying to talk about is about the electoral reforms, that if anything happens after the ruling, people should try to look at the electoral reforms, whether to bring them back to parliament, that people should really discuss issues. What we are saying is, yes, the elections took place, but there should be something which has gone wrong, not only the elections, the current elections, but there should be something which is really the people do not, are not be happy with. So we are trying now to share and discuss issues beyond these elections.
Archbishop Thomas Mzusa of Blantyre is a member of the quasi-religious group known as the Public Affairs Committee. He was speaking with us from Blantyre, Malawi. Today is Monday, October 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. The Zimbabwean government, which is facing a crippling industrial action by public hospital doctors, says it is planning to take the hundreds of doctors before the labor court in an effort to end the 35-day strike over better salaries and improved working conditions. According to Dr. Paulinos Sikuzana, chairperson of the Health Services Board, which employs doctors, the doctors moved to walk away from negotiations and the state offer of a 66% cost of living adjustment prompted the Ministry of Health to take the matter to the labor court.
Negotiations for the time being have been concluded. We have a collecting a bargaining agreement with the health workers, during which negotiations the doctors decided that they would then procedurally walk out of the negotiations before they were concluded. So the issue now, the way forward, is that there is an agreement. All health workers are expected to be back at work by tomorrow, 8 o'clock.
What will make them go back to work?
All the health workers, the majority of the workers are at work. All the consultants and specialists at United Blair Hospitals are at work. All the consultants at Mpilo Central Hospital are at work, and they have been at work. The consultants at Harare Central Hospital, who had been put on the duty rosters, they were at work. The problem that we've been having is specialists and senior doctors, Parinyata Hospital. In terms of the legal management and legal doctors and the junior doctors, interns who are just from the university, they have continued not to come to work. In terms of the labor law that governs employees, health worker employees, if they are not at work for more than 5 days, we have to take the legal action in terms of the Labor Act. And the Minister of Labor, Public Service, Labor and Social Welfare has already issued show cause order, and there will be a hearing on Tuesday which will determine whether the job action is legal or illegal, and we will take it from there in terms of the provisions of that Labor Act.
Is this the right way to tackle this kind of a problem, Dr. Sikuzana?
The rule of law, basically. The negotiations we've been negotiating since last year, the rest of the services, the rest of the health workers have conceded, and we continue. This is an agreement in interim in which the government offer has been accepted by all the health workers on the conditions that this is not the end and the end all of the negotiations of cost of living adjustment.
Dr. Paulino Sikuzana is the chairperson of the Health Service Board. He spoke from Harare with Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Meanwhile, Dr. Masimba Undoro, the spokesperson for the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, says the government does not need to take the matter to the labor court.
It's up to the employer, whichever way he feels he will address us in such a way. But for us, we were just hoping that you find solutions which capacitate us to the portfolio for work. Because taking us to the labor court, ideally, it's not a solution to this current impasse. We are actually looking for sustainable solution to actually be implemented. And we just hope the employer finds means and ways which are sustainable for us to report for it. We don't really feel that training has to deliver code to capacitate us to come to work. So we urge him to, revise this position they've decided to take and actually come up to team staff and actually hear our need so that we can be capacitated to go back to work.
So in the meantime, you're not going back to work?
We are not capacitated, basically. We managed to attend the bipartite meeting on Friday, in which the government offered us a 60%, which we declined. On the basis that cost of living has increased by more than 1,500%, and the power 60% won't capacitate us in any way to report for work. So we actually told the employer to not even punch that amount in our accounts. At that point, we also made a chance to address to them that the Health Apex negotiation platform, it wasn't really necessitating the needs of doctors. We really feel that our needs are peculiar with regards to the nature of our work. Hence, this platform wasn't really relaying our grievances, and they weren't addressed effectively. And we put it to task for the employer to sort of produce an alternative negotiation platform.
What are your demands really right now? How much do you want the government to put in your accounts?
We want our allowances to be reviewed at the current interbank exchange. I mean, our income has been eroded by inflation. As you have noticed, this past weekend, the fuel prices have actually increased by 30%.
Dr. Masimba Ondoro is the spokesperson for the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He spoke from Harare with Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Caviar, a food associated with luxury, is being produced for the first time in Madagascar. The product makes consumers in faraway France happy and provides hundreds of jobs in Madagascar. VOA's Jim Rando has our story.
In the highlands of Madagascar, Lake Mantassoa, a hydropower reservoir, is filled with sturgeon, Africa's first and only caviar farm. With the world's fourth highest rate of chronic malnutrition, Madagascar is an unlikely source for a luxury food that can cost nearly $800 a kilogram in some restaurants. But Mantassoa's cool water and cheap labor prompted French entrepreneurs to set up Asipensa in 2009, importing their first batch of fertilized sturgeon eggs from France 4 years later. They now produce Rova caviar with 300 tons of fish from six different species of sturgeon.
The day we produced the first caviar in Madagascar was a real relief because there were such few farms in the southern hemisphere. No one had tried to produce sturgeon in Madagascar, so we were not sure we could produce good caviar.
The company employs between 250 and 300 locals, depending on the season. Most never imagined working for a luxury food company.
After school, I thought I would work with shrimp or other products. Now I'm working on something unique in Madagascar and in Africa. I'm very proud.
This year, the company will produce almost 5 metric tons for export, most of it to France, where it's already making waves.
There's an exotic feel, a different note. It's about making yourself stand out among chefs already working in Paris. We're completely new, so we need to find catchy elements. The fact that caviar Rova comes from Madagascar brings an extra touch.
Globally, experts say the caviar market is projected to grow to about $560 million by 2025. Asipensa hopes to double its production in the next 5 years. Jim Randall, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsor here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very, very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Doha, Qatar, where the curtain came down on Sunday at the 2019 Athletics World Championships in Doha with some heartwarming performances by African athletes. It was Kenya who came in second position overall on the medal table with 5 gold and 11 medals in all. On the final day of the championship, Kenyan Timothy Cheruiyot outclassed a field, including 2 Olympic champions, to win the men's 1,500 meters after taking silver 2 years ago. The 23-year-old strode home in 3 minutes, 29.26 seconds, more than 2 seconds clear to claim Kenya's 5th straight win in the event.
But Timothy Cheruiyot, at last, after so many silvers, is the champion of the world. What a way to do it. 3:29 from start to finish. He was the class act. That is such a bold, bold way to take your maiden global title.
In the 10,000 meters, Joshua Cheptegei followed up his London 2017 silver medal with Doha 2019 gold medal at the end of a towering 10,000 meters contest. The 23-year-old Ugandan, who won the Commonwealth Games title last year and became IAAF World Cross Country Championships earlier this year in Aarhus, crossed the line in a personal best of 26 minutes, 48.36 seconds. Also on Sunday, Nigeria's only medal at the championship came through Ese Brume, who won the bronze medal in the women's long jump event.
I'm super excited and I'm grateful to God, really. This is a big one for me.
And finally, Kenyan's Hellen Obiri bagged her first gold medal at the World Athletics Championship in the 5,000 meters as she held on to upstage compatriot Margaret Chilimo. Obiri crossed the finish line in a championship record of 14 minutes, 26.72 seconds, with Chilimo stopping the timer at 14 minutes, 27.49 seconds. Away from the World Athletics Championships in Doha, Nigeria-Israel Adesanya became the UFC undisputed world middleweight champion on Sunday after he dethroned UFC middleweight title holder Robert Whittaker with a stunning knockout in the second round of their UFC 243 bout.
He threw everything we expected. We had everything from plan A, plan B, plan C. In this fight, we had it all the way up to Z. Man, it's honestly unreal. They said I don't have no knockout power. You too skinny, bro.
The fight, which took place at the Melbourne's Marvel Stadium in Australia, attracted a UFC world record crowd of 57,000. It was Whittaker's first loss in 10 bouts and in more than 5 years. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Rwandan security forces say they killed 19 assailants and captured 5 others who on Saturday attacked a popular tourist area in the northern province of Musanze, known for its mountain gorillas. The government says all activities in the area, including tourism, are back to normal. Cameroon's Ambazonian separatists have given the government 3 weeks to free all detainees from the English-speaking regions of the country, or they will impose a total shutdown of the region. The threat followed the Cameroon government's release over the weekend of main opposition party leader Maurice Kamto and more than 100 members of his party. And the Archbishop of Blantyre says the main purpose of the church's dialogue initiative in the ongoing electoral dispute in Malawi is to prepare the country for what happens next after the High Court rules on the matter. And that's it for this Monday, October 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.